Thanks tuned to Yesterday Broadcasting Programs from Radio's Past. I'm Mark Levoner. During radio's golden era, one of the most listened to and award-winning dramatic shows on the air was the long-running anthology series Suspense, which not only brought listeners to the edge of their seat, but invited many actors who weren't necessarily well-known in dramatic roles to show their skills in a kind of play that would put their reputation aside, or sometimes play off of it, and deliver a really entertaining half hour of radio. Later on in this hour, we'll hear a broadcast from the series called Drive-In, starring Judy Garland. And it nearly goes without saying that she was one of the world's most beloved singers and actors during the golden age of Hollywood, and her popularity has certainly endured throughout the years. From her roles in The Wizard of Oz to A Star is Born, Garland got a very early start capturing the hearts of her fans. On the national stage, it was her radio appearances at the age of 12 on the variety program The Shell Chateau in 1935. From there, it seemed that the sky wasn't even the limit for Judy as she headed up some of Hollywood's biggest musicals on screen and also maintained a presence on radio with appearances on shows where her singing was showcased, most of them making a lot of room for funny patter between her and the host, much of it during wartime broadcasts of Command Performance and Mail Call for Armed Forces Radio, and with Frank Sinatra from time to time.
But no song could be as swell as Judy Garland.
As swell as Judy Garland? Oh, you're kidding.
Well, as I live and breathe.
Live and breathe? Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, wait a minute.
Let's hear one of those wartime episodes of Mail Call, now featuring Judy Garland as MC, as heard by the troops overseas on Armed Forces Radio from April 11th, 1945.
Mail Call from the United States of America. Of words and music and laughter delivered to you by the stars from whom you want to hear in answer to the request you send to Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. In response to your many persistent letters, fellas, this mail call is going to be supervised by one of the loveliest girls of the screen, MGM singing star, Judy Garland.
A moment's madness. Love can be insane. Love can be a life of sadness and pain. Love can be a summer shower. Love can be the sun. Love can be two hearts that flower as one. Joy forever, or an empty name. Love is almost never, ever the same. Love can be an evil doer. Love can be a fraud. Love can make you feel like you were adored. The truth, love can be an endless fountain of youth. it doesn't always happen to you. Love can be a dying ember. Love can be a flame. Love fresh as the morning may be wild when it's morning. Sweet endeavor or a dirty shame. Love is almost never ever the same.
Judy, that was really swell.
Thank you, Don.
And now, what's next, Judy?
Well, Don, I've been peeking at that big sack of mail that pours into the Armed Forces Radio Service from overseas, and there was one particular singing group who had a lot of mail stacked up. Well, I couldn't mean any other than those masters of harmony, the Mary Macs, singing Stand and in the Need of Prayer.
It's me, oh Lord. Standing in the need of prayer. It's me, oh Lord. Standing in the need of prayer.
Not my sister, not my brother, but it's
me, oh Lord. Standing in the need of prayer. It's me, oh Lord. Standing in the need of prayer.
Oh, God's chilling, all standing in the need of prayer. It's me.
Max, that was really Mary.
Say, Judy.
Yes, Don.
You know, Judy, what I've been thinking all evening, here you are, mistress of ceremonies on a big radio show, and yet it was only just a few years ago that you first arrived here in Hollywood.
Yes, Don, Hollywood's been very, very good to me.
Well, I guess you've got just about everything that a girl could want.
Well, I have been lucky, Don, but I still haven't got the one thing I've always dreamed about.
What do you mean?
Don't you remember? I'll tell you if you'll listen. Dear Mr. Gable, I am writing this to you, and I hope that you will read it so you'll know. My heart beats like a hammer, and I stutter and I stammer every time I see you at the picture show. I guess I'm just another fan of yours, and I thought I'd write and tell you so. You made me love you. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. You made me love you. I guess you always knew it. You made me happy sometimes. You made me glad. But there were times, sir, you made me feel so sad. You made me sigh, 'cause I didn't want to tell you. I didn't want to tell you. I think you're grand. That's true. Yes, I do. Deed, I do. You know I do. I can't tell you what I'm feeling. The very mention of your name sends my heart reeling. You know you made me
I mean, Don, I've wished and wished for him.
There, there, Judy. Your wish will come true.
You really think so?
Well, certainly. Why, who knows? Maybe the door will open this very minute and Farb Gable will walk in.
Oh, if he only would. Don, you don't suppose? Come in, come in.
Quiet, Bob. Oh! Well, hello, Judy. Hello, Don.
Oh.
What's wrong?
Well, Bob, you know...
Turn on the heating system. What is it? Huh?
Well, Bob, Judy was just sort of hoping that it would be Clark Gable.
Oh, I'm sorry, Judy. I'm in the wrong studio. I'll check.
Oh, no, Bob. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Please don't go.
Oh, but I'm Bob Hope, and you wanted Clark Gable.
I know, but people get used to margarine instead of butter. Come on, won't you please stay?
No, I'm not kidding myself, Judy. I'm no Clark Gable, and I know it.
Well, now, don't say that, Bob. That's not true. Why, name one thing that Clark Gable's got that you haven't got.
Women. Now, you don't have to make me feel good, Judy.
No, Bob, I'm serious. You and Mr. Gable are similar in many respects.
You really think so?
Of course. Well, you're both... You're both... Well, you're both men.
Flattery will get you no place, Judy. I'll just be running along, if
now,
you don't mind.
Now, wait, Bob, I'm afraid I've hurt you.
Oh, that's all right.
No, you've got that hurt look in your eyes.
It's not your fault. I strained them yesterday going through Esquire.
Oh, Bob,
they've cut a lot of stuff, haven't they?
Bob, I don't see why you won't listen to
me. Well, it's no use, Judy. How can I hope to compete with Clark Gable? All the women love those beautiful big ears of his.
Oh, well, don't you worry, Bob. Your nose is as big as both of them put together.
Now,
I'll make a confession, Bob. I've often dreamed about you, too.
You have?
Uh-huh. You know, sometimes you're a knight in shining armor, and sometimes you're a cowboy riding out on the plains, and then other times you're a Northwest Mountie roaming a frozen wilderness.
Don't I ever go out with anybody but a horse? But anyway, Judy, you better forget me. I'm not for you. You know my reputation in this town. I'm a wolf.
Oh, no, you're not. You're not a wolf. You're sweet and innocent and noble and pure.
Have you talked to any girls or old carols lately?
Well, I
you almost got the laugh there. You know that.
I don't care what...
Straight lines. You're sweet and innocent, noble and pure. I thought you were going to pull out a bladder for a minute. It's all right. I may have a spot in here later. Go ahead.
Are you ready?
I carry a grudge, you know. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I don't care what anybody says. I know an honest man when I see one.
Judy, please.
It's true. You're a square shooter. Look at that square jaw. Look at those square shoulders.
Oh, Judy.
I mean it. I think you're the biggest square I ever met.
No, Judy, all those people don't call me a wolf for nothing. I'm a pretty cynical man of the world.
Oh, no, you're not. You've just built up a hard shell to protect yourself with from the outside world. But underneath that hard shell, you're soft and mushy.
What am I, a man or an oyster? What is this? Don't you believe what you read in the papers? I'm at Ciro's with Lorraine Bacall one night. I'm at Romanoff's with Lana Turner the next. Then I'm in the Coconut Grove with Ann Sheridan.
I know. I've seen those items, but I know they're not true. Why, a man of your age wouldn't have that much energy.
That read like a straight line of rehearsal. Now, wait a minute, Judy. I'm not that old.
Well, no, I didn't mean you were real old, like Bing Crosby. Yeah.
Please, let's leave Barbara Fritchie's boyfriend out of it.
No matter what you say, you'll never convince me that you're a wolf, Bob. I trust you. And if you stopped your car out on the darkest street and said you were out of gas, I'd believe you implicitly.
You would, really?
Yes.
Doing anything tonight, Judy?
Just to show you how I trust you, I will go out with you tonight.
You will?
Oh, Bob, I didn't know you did imitations of Cocker Spaniels.
There was no Cocker Spaniel, believe me. Well, Judy, since you're the outdoor type, I suppose you like sports.
Oh, yes. Baseball, golf, swimming, fishing.
How about sailing? You like sailing?
Love it.
Well, I'll meet you in the Tunnel of Love. Third boat from the end. I'll meet you later.
That was the Merry Max again, singing a brand new arrangement of There's a Great Day Coming Manana. Say, Bob.
Yes, Judy?
You know, it was very funny your mentioning the Tunnel of Love before.
Why, what do you mean?
Well, the first date I ever had, the fellow wanted to take me to the Tunnel of Love.
On his first date with you?
Yes.
Gee, right into combat with no basic training.
I'll never forget that boy. What a character.
I know just the kind of guy you mean. I'll give you 2-1 he wore a jazz bow.
That's right.
And every Sunday afternoon he'd take you walking.
Judy.
Yes, Robert.
I'm sure having fun walking down the street holding hands.
Well, why don't you hold one of mine? Robert. Robert, you look so nice today. What have you got in your hair?
Oh, something new. Hog fat.
What's new about hog fat?
Well, this is today's. Come on, let's keep moving. When I stand still, it runs down my collar.
Robert. Robert, what's that you're chewing on? Candy?
Nope, tar.
Tar? Robert, throw that tar away.
Can't. Been trying to for 6 days. You know, you look nice, too, Judy. I like that dress.
Yes? My mother made it for me out of a potato sack. What do you think of it, hmm?
Should have took out more potatoes. At times like this... Got another great line. At times like this, I'm... Sorry, I'm not a masher. Read the stuff, folks.
Well, what are we going to do tonight, Robert?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, let's do something different, something exciting.
Okay, let's go down to the swamp and croak at bullfrogs.
Oh, no. Let's go to the drugstore. Come on, let's go to the drugstore and get a soda.
Oh, soda. That's all you girls want. Come on home and I'll make you a soda.
I've told you 100 times, Robert, it can't be done. You can't get bubbles into a glass of water by using a bicycle pump.
Okay, let's go in the drugstore. Let's sit at the counter.
Okay.
1 root beer, 4 straws.
Did you say 4 straws?
Yeah, we're supposed to meet another couple here.
What do you belong to, a share the burp club?
Oh, please, please hurry. I'm awful thirsty.
Oh, keep your shirt on.
Robert, did you hear what he said?
Yeah, and I think he's right. It's kind of cool in here.
Now, here's your root beer, Curly Nose.
Gee, that root beer looks pretty good. Here's your straw, Judy. Come on, I'll race you.
Okay, Robert, I'll just...
I won.
Robert, I didn't even get one drop in my straw.
Well, here, squeeze the drippings out of mine. Come on, Judy, let's go home. I'm kind of anxious to get to your house.
Well, all right.
Just a minute, lover boy. There's such a thing as money, you know. That'll be 10 cents.
Oh, yeah? Well, here you are. There's 5.
Come on, let it drop, brother.
Okay, okay.
Gee, Robert, what a sacrifice. You gave him your camper bag.
Well, come on, let's get out of here.
Well, it was nice of you to take me home, Robert.
Yeah, here's your house. Mind if I come in for a while?
No, I don't mind. Oh, look, there's my old grandfather sitting on the porch. Hello, grandfather!
That's all right, Grandpa. Don't bother to get up.
Inside. Mm-hmm. Come on, Robert, let's sit on the couch.
Is it soft?
Why, Robert?
Shucks, I don't want to break this egg I got in my pocket.
Well, here we are.
Yep. Just look at me cuddle. Gee, I sure can cuddle, can't I?
Oh, Robert, put your Easter bunny away and pay some attention to me. I want to hold hands.
Oh, we hold hands every night. I thought of something way better than that.
You did?
Yep. Nobody's around, are they?
No.
Well, come on, let's take off our shoes and hold toes.
Right there.
I sure go for you, Judy.
Judy? Oh, Judy!
Oh, I'm afraid we've awakened Mother. Yes, Mother, what is it?
Daughter, have you got that boy Robert down there, or did the stable door blow open?
She'll never learn that there are no stairs in this house.
Young man, you've been calling on my daughter for 12 years.
That's right.
I don't know what your intentions are, but I doubt it.
Well, I love Judy, and I want to marry her.
Mm. Young man, you'll have to make a lot of money.
Duck soup.
And you'll have to do everything you can to make my daughter happy.
Duck soup.
And you'll have to build her a beautiful home.
Duck soup.
And naturally, I intend to come and live with you.
Oops, one meatball.
Well, that's it, fellas. The end of another mail call letter. Signatures include Judy Garland, the Mary Max, Bob Hope, Frank Nelson, Paula Winslow, the Armed Forces Radio Service Orchestra, and yours truly, Don Wilson. This program is arranged with the cooperation of the Hollywood Victory Committee.
Mail call on Tuned to Yesterday from April 11th, 1945 from Armed Forces Radio. You're listening to The Door to Suspense Hour on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier. Judy Garland's omnipresent celebrity endured in the movies and on radio in the 1940s and 50s singing, of course, and also making jokes with a musical precision, particularly when paired with Bing Crosby on his radio shows. She even appeared in her most famous role as Dorothy in a radio adaptation of The Wizard of Oz in 1950. But before that, in 1946, she made her way to the CBS studios in New York to appear in a broadcast of Suspense, which at the time was helmed by the acclaimed director William Spear, who, with wife Kate Thompson, were close friends with Judy. In fact, when her daughter Liza Minnelli was born, Spear and Thompson were named her godparents. Though Garland's acting talent knew few bounds, to hear her in a thriller was something very new to Suspense audiences listening to the tune of 18 million a week. And on this particular Thursday night at 8 on November 21st, 1946, she would make her one and only appearance on the series, starring in the story Drive-In.
Roma Wines bring you Judy Garland in a remarkable tale of suspense.
I wish I hadn't let Ruth talk me into serving that last car that came into the drive-in that rainy night. It was late and I was tired. I'd been on my feet all day carrying heavy trays, hopping to it with impatient people glaring their headlights on and off in my eyes. Heaven knows there are a lot of impatient people in Hollywood. We car hops don't have an easy time of it. Talk about your mail carriers. Well, we're the same. Raining or blowing or boiling hot, we've got to get through with that tray or know the reason why. Tired, hungry people who sit back in their car expect $1 million worth of service for a 10-cent tip. Why do we do it? Sure, there are other ways of making a living in Hollywood, but not many that hold that glittering promise that maybe someday, somehow, maybe someone will say...
Why, that girl looks like Lana Turner.
Yes, at least her hair's done up that way.
I think I could use her, Rennie. The musical version of the Forsyte Saga. Oh, she'd be great in color. I think I'll ask her to come out to the studio.
Yes, I know.
Maybe it doesn't happen often, but there's always the chance. And there's always that hope. That's what keeps us going, I guess. But there are other things that can happen in the drive-in that aren't on the menu. Like that rainy night I was telling you about when I let Ruth talk me into serving that last car that came in.
Millie, listen, please take his order, will you? I got three cars.
Oh, look at the clock, will you? It's nearly midnight. I'm off duty.
Oh, please, Miller, just this once more, will you? My date's waiting. I'll do the same for you, son.
Ruth. What's the matter with him? Can't he read? Please do not honk your horn. It looks clear enough to me.
It's a doctor's car. You see, he's probably in a rush. Anyway, you got nobody waiting for you.
Oh, all right.
Oh, gee, thanks, Mel.
It was true. I had no one waiting for me. Only the bus that was going to take me to Glendale, where I lived alone in an apartment. So I buttoned up my raincoat and took a menu over to the car. Good evening.
Never mind the menu. There's some black coffee, a pot of it. And a ham sandwich. Please hurry it.
When I took his order over to the car, the window was rolled up a little too far and it interfered with the tray, so I reached in to wind it down. When I touched the handle, it felt wet, kind of sticky, too, but I didn't think anything about it. I got the tray firmly set, and then I looked at my hand. It was as red as blood. I looked up quickly at him.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Dr. Morgan. I just had an emergency in the car.
Oh, an accident?
Yes, Sunset and Vine. Quite a crash. I just happened by and I took one of them to the hospital.
Oh, gee, that's a shame.
Yes, it's too bad.
I walked back trying to wipe the blood from my hand with a paper napkin. It gave me a creepy feeling to have somebody's blood on my hand. Then I went in to wash. I was trying to keep close track of the time, and I was a little worried for fear the big drive-in clock wasn't right. It sometimes ran slow. So I took a coin from my apron pocket. I figured it was worth a nickel not to miss that last bus to Glendale. I walked over to the payphone, and I was about to drop the nickel in when I looked out, and he was leaning on the horn and beckoning to me at the same time. I put the nickel back in my pocket and hurried out to him.
I'm sorry, but I'm in a hurry. I haven't time for this coffee to cool off. I'll take the sandwich with me. How much do I owe you?
Well, I'll be 42 cents.
Oh, here you are.
Thank you.
I hope I didn't interrupt your phone call. It wasn't important, was it?
No, I was just checking on the time. I don't want to miss my bus.
There was a clock right over your head.
Well, that's usually wrong.
If I have the time, it's about 4 minutes to 12.
Oh, I'm going to miss my bus.
What time does it leave?
At midnight from Hollywood and La Brea.
Well, hop in. I'll take you. I'm going right past there.
Oh, would you? I'll take the train. I'll be right back. I might still be able to make it.
Okay.
In my hurry to unhook the tray from the window, I gave it a jerk and it fell crashing to the ground. Oh, dear. Ruth?
Yeah?
Look, help me with these things, will you? I'm going to miss my bus.
Go ahead, Miller. I'll get it.
We picked the things up quickly and Ruth went off with the tray. I started to run around the other side of the car when I noticed something shining on the ground. It was one of the shakers that had fallen from the tray. I picked it up and started toward the driveway.
Why don't you just put that in your pocket? You can return it tomorrow. Come on, you're going to miss your bus.
I put the shaker in my apron pocket and I rushed over to the other side of the car. He opened the door for me and I was just about to get in when I hesitated. I wasn't used to doing this kind of thing. The other girls sometimes let their customers drive them home, but I never did. Still, he looked so decent, and I...
Come on. You'll miss it.
Then he reached out as if to help me in, and I felt that he was really concerned about my missing the bus, because he seemed to pull me into the car. First thing I knew, I was sitting beside him. Then the door slammed, and we were driving off. I was a little uneasy, but then I thought it's only a few blocks. I won't be in the car long.
I suppose you're in a hurry because someone's waiting for you.
No, I live alone. But I'd hate to walk back to Glendale in this rain.
You won't have to walk.
Well, this is very nice of you. I appreciate it.
Not at all. Would you mind rolling up that window on your side? There's a draft.
Oh, of course. You can let me off at that corner over there.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere along here will be all right. This is fine. Right over there by the stop sign. Wait a minute, you're going through the stop signal.
Am I?
Yes, but I'll get off over there by the other one. My bus! You're turning the wrong way.
Am I?
Yes, this goes up to Laurel Canyon.
Does it?
Hey, let me out of here.
You thought you were pretty smart, didn't you?
I don't know what you mean. Please, let me out of this car.
You went right to the phone. You thought I wouldn't see you.
The phone? But I was calling about the time. Honest, I was.
The time? With that clock over your head.
But that clock's wrong sometimes. Besides, who would I call? Why should I call anyone about you?
You were calling the police.
No, honest, I wasn't. Let me out of this car.
You were going to catch a bus. You were going straight to the police. That's where you were going.
Yeah, but why? Why should I go to the police?
You know why.
No, really, I don't.
Because you saw it. You saw his blood. No, you don't. There. You won't need to try to open that door again. Now we'll be getting along.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you Judy Garland in Drive-In. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
After I made that last try to get out, he broke the handle of the door. All the strength seemed to go out of my body. I just sat there as we drove on. We passed a few people and some cars in the next blocks, and I thought of calling out, but then I knew why he'd asked me to roll up the window when I'd first gotten into the car. Then we were at the mouth of the canyon, and I could see the road, dark and lonely up ahead. The car twisted and swerved. My arm ached from his strong fingers that had dug into it when I tried to jump out. looked at him from the corner of my eye. He hadn't seemed like a criminal back at the drive-in, and he didn't seem like one now. His jaw was black from needing a shave, still his face, well, it wasn't like a criminal's at all. I was so tired.
Quit staring at me.
Oh, look, I didn't know anything about you. Honest, I didn't. Please let me go.
You know something about me now.
Well, I won't tell anybody. Whatever it is, I promise I won't.
A woman's promises. Remind me to tell you a story about a woman and a promise.
Oh, let me out. Please let me out right here.
It's a long way back to Glendale. Well,
that's all the better. It'll take me hours to get back, and you'll be miles away by then.
I'm not taking any chances with you, Finn.
Please let me out. I've got to get back.
You said no one was waiting for you. You live alone, don't you? No one will miss you.
We both heard the siren then. He looked quickly in the rear vision mirror. Then he took a gun from his pocket and he turned to me.
If that's for us and we're stopped, remember just this. I've used this gun before tonight and I can use it again if I have to.
No.
If I'm taken, you'll go first. Now listen, I'm a doctor and you're a nurse. We're headed for an emergency. If you want to live, you won't try to pull anything.
You're on awful fast for a wet night, aren't you? Followed you up from Hollywood.
I'm Dr. Morgan, officer. This is Nurse Johnson, emergency call.
I see your identification.
He fumbled through his pockets with one hand, holding the gun in my ribs with the other. The motorcycle cop looked over at me. I thought for a moment I could signal him with my eyes. But then I knew he wasn't looking at my face. He was looking down at my white starched blouse, which you could see under my raincoat. He thought it was a nurse's uniform.
Ah, here you are.
Okay, Doc. Sorry I stopped you.
Hey, just a minute.
What's the matter?
Just wanted to tell you. Rain started to slide up there a ways. Take it easy.
Thanks, I will.
You're not Dr. Morgan, are you?
What do you think?
Then we came on the landslide. It wasn't a big one, but it made a terrible mess of the road. He didn't slow down, and the car swerved crazily as it slipped from one side of the highway to the other. Suddenly, I felt as though the whole rear end had slipped down. I looked over at him. He was tense. His knuckles turned white as he clutched the wheel. He shoved the car into reverse. Oh, I hoped it had never moved. It didn't. We were stuck, hopelessly stuck.
But what a luck.
Suddenly the car was filled with light. A car had come around the curve behind us. This might be my chance.
Remember, I still have this gun. Don't try anything. Say, we're stuck here. Could you give us a push? We'll have some California hospitality, will you? I'll have to get out. I'll have to put something under the wheel. You stay here. Now, stay there.
There were some bushes by the side of the road. If I could reach them, I could perhaps run up the side of the hill and hide. Then in the morning, make my way back down the canyon. I carefully turned the handle of the door. I could see him in the mirror. He was at the back of the car. I eased the door gently open, put one foot out. I was just sliding out when I heard him.
You're not going anyplace. Come here, give me that raincoat.
Why?
I need something dry to stuff under this wheel.
But I...
You won't be needing it. Come on!
He practically ripped it off my back. Wound it into a ball and bending down, he stuffed it under the wheel. The gun. Stuck out of his back pocket. If I could get it, if I could lay my hands on it. I held my breath. I reached out. It seemed so far, but I finally touched it. Then I snatched it from his pocket swiftly.
Look! Give me that gun.
I'm going. You can't stop me now.
Can't I?
No. You stay right where you are. I won't hurt you. All I want to do is get home. I'm going, but if you follow me, I'll...
You'll what?
I'll kill you.
I don't think you will.
Yes, I will. You think I'm afraid.
Aren't you?
No. I don't care what happens to you. You're a murderer. You killed somebody.
I thought you didn't know anything about me.
I didn't, but I do now, and I'm going to tell the police. You stay where you are. No, don't. I'm not afraid. I'll shoot.
Too bad I used up all of those tonight. You could have filled me full of holes. Now, give me that gun and get in the car.
Are you going to kill me?
What do you think?
We were nearing the top of the canyon now. The road was very steep. The rain had let up. It was just drizzling now. Even though he hadn't answered my question, I knew the answer. He was going to kill me. I wouldn't get back home tonight. Not tonight or any other night. It was funny. I sometimes used to hate that little apartment of mine where nothing ever happened. But tonight... And then... For some strange reason, I thought about Ruth. What would she say tomorrow when I didn't show up at work? And I wondered where they'd find my body.
Well, here we are. Lookout Mountain. Top of the world.
Suddenly we came over the crest of the hill, and way down below the city stretched out for miles, millions of lights glittering in the rain. For a moment I forgot everything. It was the most beautiful sight I'd ever seen.
Ever been up here before?
No.
Nice, isn't it?
Yes.
I used to come up here with a girl once. We used to sit and talk for hours. Come on. We'll get a better view if we get out.
I knew it was foolish to argue with him, so I followed him. But as he walked over towards the edge, I became frightened. It was such a steep drop.
Well? Come on.
I'm afraid to get so close to the edge.
You won't fall. Look. That's Los Angeles over there. That bright line of lights is Western Avenue. I went to school somewhere along in there. I used to get in all sorts of trouble at school. But I got by. I managed. Everyone said I'd grow out of it. Over that way towards the ocean, that's Westwood. That's where she lived. This girl I was telling you about. That was the best part of my life, I guess. That's when they said marriage and a wife would straighten me out. Marriage and a wife would straighten me out in Westwood, they said.
Does your wife still live there?
No. She's dead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You needn't be. I killed her.
Why?
Because she couldn't keep her promises.
Did you kill her tonight?
No. A long time ago. The jury said I was insane. But I think it was the sanest thing I ever did. They put me in an asylum. Do you know what it's like being locked up year after year when you know there's nothing wrong with you?
No. No, I don't.
It isn't good. You'd do anything to get out. Anything. Anything at all.
I knew I knew if I could keep him talking, maybe a car would come along. Maybe something would happen. It was my only chance.
What are you thinking about?
You killed someone else tonight, didn't you?
Yes.
Dr. Morgan?
Yes. He was one of the men who thought I was insane.
Why did you do it?
I wanted his car to get away in. I didn't want to be locked up anymore.
Oh, but they'll catch you.
No. They won't find the doctor for several days. I saw to that.
How can you be so sure?
I do things thoroughly.
What are you going to do now?
First, I'm going to... And then I guess I'll go south.
I knew what he meant by that pause. I started to back away slowly. I'd made a mistake by reminding him in the present. My hands went instinctively to my apron pocket for something to defend myself with. I knew there was a pencil there. It was sharp. Maybe I could scratch him or hurt him some way with it, but when I reached for it, I felt something else instead, something cold and hard. I was puzzled for a moment, and then I remembered. It was a shaker I'd picked up at the drive-in.
Stand still.
And then he started moving toward me. Me with only a pencil and a shaker to defend myself with.
It's too bad I came into that drive-in tonight.
Oh, why did you?
Because I was hungry. Because I hadn't eaten for a long time.
Weren't you afraid someone would see you?
No alarm had gone up.
How'd you know?
I knew. If only you hadn't rolled that window down.
Well, if you're sorry, why don't you let me go?
It's too late. What's that?
With a sudden movement, his arms were around me in a tight embrace. I started to scream, but suddenly his lips closed over mine. Pushing my head back roughly, he kissed me. I could scarcely breathe, and I felt the car's headlights on us like a spotlight.
Just look at this view, will you? I'll have to do this in a picture sometime.
Can't you see you're interrupting something? Come on, drive on, will you?
Okay, okay. And in all this rain, you'd think people would have some more sense.
He held me a moment longer. When the car had gone, he released me. My pencil had fallen to the ground, and I was left with only the shaker in my hand. I fingered it nervously, and then I felt the top coming off. I felt the content spilling in my hand.
What have you got in your hand?
Nothing.
Give it to me.
No.
Give it to me.
He grabbed my wrist. He pulled me toward him. We were moving to the edge of the cliff, but my other hand was free, and I threw the contents of the shaker into his face. His hands flew to his face in an effort to clear his eyes, but I knew it was too late. The pepper had blinded him. He lunged out for me, but I stepped aside quickly, and he slipped in the mud. His hands went out to steady himself. He clawed frantically at Finley. Then I saw him falling over backwards, over the edge. Then my strength gave way, and I felt myself sinking down to the ground. I don't know how long I must have been there, but when I came to, it was raining again. I was soaked to the skin, and there was mud caked in my hair. There was no one in sight. The lights of Los Angeles stretched out in a pattern peacefully below. And I knew that somewhere at the foot of those hills was Glendale. And my apartment. I rose slowly to my feet, and I started back toward the road. Somehow, everything that had happened seemed unreal. Like a dream. Everything but the way he kissed me. To keep me from crying out.
Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, selected for your pleasure from the world's greatest reserves of fine wines. And now it's curtain call time for tonight's suspense star, Judy Garland. Judy, you were grand. We hope you enjoyed your part tonight as much as we did your performance.
Thank you, Ken. As a matter of fact, playing the part of a waitress tonight was a treat. I just pictured myself knee-deep in juicy steaks.
Well, that reminds me, Judy, as a waitress, you deserve a tip. And here's the best tip I know. To make Thanksgiving dinner really outstanding, serve Grand Estate California Burgundy or Sauterne. When you serve Grand Estate wines, you serve the finest, the crowning achievement of vintner skill.
Well, that's a real tip, Ken.
And so you can follow it, Judy. Here with Roma's compliments is your gift basket of Grand Estate wines.
Well, thank you. And while I'm giving out thanks, let me give a great big portion with love and kisses to my great and good friend Bill Spear for his magical direction, and to Raymond Lewis for playing the man so wonderfully.
Well, thanks to you, Judy, and to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of The Yearling, for their cooperation in making you available to us tonight. Next week, we'll have Chester Morris as star of Suspense.
Oh, he's one of my favorite actors. I won't miss it. Good night.
Tonight's Suspense play was written by Mel Donnelly and Muriel Roy Bolton. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Chester Morris as star of Suspense.
Suspense from November 21st, 1946 on CBS, closing the door to Suspense Hour on Tune 2 Yesterday featuring Judy Garland. Be sure to be with us again as we enjoy more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.